And then we would also promote it in the club, and it would be a fun thing. And we'd people, yeah, I'll be in the contest. Oh, come on, you ought to be in the contest. And people would sort of say, well, yeah, I'll throw my hat in. But if you announce a contest and one person says they'll compete and nobody else is interested in it, everybody sits there like a bunch of bumps on a log, you won't get those new members and that energy happening in the club. So we would promote it. We call people on the phone, the same thing. The vice president of education would be on the phone saying, you got to do that humor speech contest. You've been great in table topics. Throw your hat in the ring. I want to put this contest together. You need to do the table topics. The person goes, I do? Yeah. You do. Oh, okay, put my hat in. I'll give it put my name down. I'll give it a shot. We would get a good contingent out there to support our members at the area contest. So we just didn't send a guy out by himself. We'd make sure that there were 10 or 12 members at the area contest, and people would get to see how the area was, and they get to know the other Toastmasters in the area, and the same thing at division and district. And then there would be a whole rooting that would happen as people were starting to win. We'd get this fan club that was going along wanting them to go up the level. So it's part of that whole club experience. But the way you do it is by making sure that that club environment is safe for the person to get up and do a contest the same way it's safe for them to get up and do a speech.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Let's talk about Toastmasters overall. You've now been traveling around the world. What have you been noticing about the Toastmasters system, the Toastmasters organization?
Well, one of the things that I have seen, I think I was counting up to 11 or 12 countries this year, I don't know, 18 or 20 districts in scores of different clubs. It's interesting that no matter what culture, no matter what ethnic background, no matter what nationality somebody comes from, no matter what socioeconomic status, we as a race of human beings have a problem standing up and communicating in front of a group. Mm. It's not something that's isolated to one specific ethnicity or culture or nationality or anything
or
like that, or city or anything like that. So just understand, first of all, that if you're nervous when you get in front of a group, you're probably human. You're like 6 billion other people on the planet, okay? So there's nothing special about you as much as you want to believe that. The other thing is that the Toastmasters program works when it is worked. And when I talk about the Toastmasters program, I have gained from all of the different hats that I've worn in Toastmasters, and it's not just about speaking. And I go over this in our club quite a bit, and this is one of the things that we pushed a lot so people realize this. There are members that come into Toastmasters and they say, all I want to do is speak, and they'll only show up to the meetings when they speak. Well, they're cheating themselves out of probably 60 or 70% of the gain you're going to get out of Toastmasters. Because you see, every functionary position is a position of personal development when you wear that hat and do that function. Mm. Now, as I give an example, how many people never heard an awe until they were the awe counter?
That was me.
Yeah. You never heard them, and now it gives you whiplash. You know, you're, oh, that hurt. Oh, stop it when you hear it. You never heard an awe until you were the awe counter. Yeah. When your timer, you would watch speeches and you had no idea where the person was in time, when they were wrapping it up, how it was working. You become acutely aware when your timer, how the timing on speeches is going and how long a 5 to 7 minute speech is. Even getting up and you have, in different clubs, you have a joke master or a chuckle master, telling a joke and getting a good laugh is a difficult thing to do. That's a skill that you develop by that function. Even being ballot counter. A lot of times I would look and I would think, gee, that speaker was really good, and I wouldn't know what everybody else thought of it. But somebody else might have got a ribbon. And then when I'm ballot counter, I realize that, wow, there were six people, or maybe three people, let's say, that were neck and neck, and one person got one more vote. And I realize that people evaluated speeches differently. And so all these different hats work to develop you as a speaker. You come on up to being an evaluator or a coach. I am a firm believer you cannot be a great speaker without being a great evaluator or speaking coach. You have to be able to know the elements of it and play it both ways. You have to be able to look at a speech, be able to tear it apart, and make it work, because you have to be able to do that to yourself. Now, when I was working up the ranks up to the international championship in 2005, I was my own evaluator. I looked at my own videos. I had to now analyze all of my own speeches and figure out how I was going to do it better and push myself through where I was going. The truth of the matter was, in order to have somebody coach me, I needed to have someone who'd been there and knew it better than I did, and I didn't have that person around. It had to be me. Okay? So becoming a good speech evaluator, a good speaking coach is critical, and it's one of the toughest things you can do because you have to look at that speaker, get your notes down, and then you have to create a speech and go up and give it. And it is one of the most difficult things in Toastmasters to actually do is to do that and do it in a way that truly improves another human being.